There was a time when men wore hats all the time. Some of you remember those days. Well, here's a little story about those days. There was a man who lost his hat. I know. He decided, he came up with a plan in order to get a hat back. He said, "I'll go to church on Sunday. I'm going to sit on the back row. And before church dismisses, I'm going to sneak out to the foyer. And I'll have my choice of all the hats that these guys took off and put on the shelf." So he followed his plan, right? He made his choices. He said, "I'm going to go," so he went. "I'm going to sit on the back row," so he sat on the back row. The preacher started preaching on the Ten Commandments. So he found himself not sneaking out, right? But he stayed for the whole thing. In fact, at the end, he walked down the aisle to the preacher. He said, "Preacher, I got to tell you, I came here this morning with the intent to steal a hat to replace the one I lost." And the preacher said, "Oh, my son, bless you, bless you. Was it when I started preaching about thou shalt not steal that changed your mind?" He said, "No, it was the one about adultery. I remember where I left my hat." There are things, good, bad, negative, positive, that happen to us that change the course of our life and force us to make some choices. And these choices determine, are we going to go towards God or are we going to go further from God? And it all comes from this mindset of making choices. I have both positive and negative influences. I have a couple examples. One is a negative influence. A few months ago, I got a speeding ticket. I know that's not a shock to some of you. In fact, it wasn't a shock to me. I kind of used to seeing the blue lights in my mirror these days. But what I didn't like that, but I really didn't like the fact that a few weeks later, I got a nice letter from the state saying, "Congratulations. All you need is a few more points, so your license is going to be suspended." And I thought, oh, I've got to make some changes. This is one of those things that happen, right? I got to choose what I'm going to do. And then Liz said, "Don't think I'm going to be your taxi." And I said, okay, I got to make some changes. So I repented. I re-examined my driving habits. I reduced my speed. And I've been ticket-free here for several months. And I'm hoping in January my insurance rates will prove it. Hoping they're going to go back down. So that's a negative experience. A positive experience. Liz, when I met her, in fact, she was warned about me. One of my friends said, "Do you know what you're getting into? He is a mess of a man." That's her description. And I was a crazy mess of a man. Well, I still am. But when I met Liz, I was in school. I was doing ministry. I was a semi-professional singer. I sang with Opera Memphis. I taught voice lessons in town. I sang with two other choirs in town. I was busy, busy, busy. But as we fell in love, as we dated and got serious, I knew I had to make some changes. And so I gave up the singing part. I gave up the stage. I couldn't do it all. I couldn't do all that and have a happy wife. And you know what they say about if you want a happy life, you know you're going to have a happy wife. So I made some choices that determined the path that I was on. Are you tracking with me? We all make choices, and every choice is really a fork in the road, right? It's either going to lead us this way or it's going to lead us that way. Sometimes they're negative. Sometimes they're positive. And we can all tell stories of how our path has been changed by our choices. Maybe it is when you back when you met your future spouse. Maybe that incident or circumstance was when you saw a really good example lived out in somebody else's life, and you said, "I want to be like that." So you made some choices to go down that path. Maybe somebody has given you a second chance or a third chance, and that has affected your choices. And you said, "I owe it to them. I'm going to change the way I live. I'm going to make some different decisions." It could be parents. When you had kids, did it change the path of your life? Of course it did. It totally altered the course of your life. It totally changed the choices that you made. Students, I think of things like Memphis Work Camp and our mission trips. It's like, I just saw a Facebook post the other day about one of our kids who went to Mexico with us. And that was a couple of years ago, but they're still saying, that affected me so much. Those things can change us, right? They force us or encourage us to make decisions and to go either this way, we're going to change this, we're going to do this. There might be negative things. It might be that you got fired from your job. We have a choice to make. What are you going to do about that, right? It might be that you got bad grades and it's threatening your chance for scholarship or your chance to be on the team at school. And you got to make a decision. You got to make several decisions. You got to make some choices that are going to change the way you're going. Some people have to hit rock bottom before they make a change. And here's the important principle. The choices we make determine the paths we take. Can you say that with me? The choices we make determine the paths we take. And this is so true. You can look back on your own life and you can see the choices you've made. You know, if you turn around and look backwards through your life and you trace, I'm here because of this decision, I'm here, I was there because of that decision, you can go back and you can see the trajectory of your life and how your choices have altered your trajectory, put you on a different path. Everybody knows this. Even DirecTV knows this.
When your cable's on the fritz, you get frustrated. When you get frustrated, your daughter imitates. When your daughter imitates, she gets thrown out of school. When she gets thrown out of school, she meets undesirables. When she meets undesirables, she ties the knot with undesirables. And when she ties the knot with undesirables, you get a grandson with a dog collar. Don't have a grandson with a dog collar. Get rid of cable and upgrade to DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. When your cable company keeps you on hold, you get angry. When you get angry, you go blow off steam. When you go blow off steam, accidents happen. When accidents happen, you get an eye patch. When you get an eye patch, people think you're tough. When people think you're tough, people want to see how tough. And when people want to see how tough, you wake up in a roadside ditch. Don't wake up in a roadside ditch. Get rid of cable and upgrade to DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV.
There's a bunch of those out there. I wanted to show all of them because they're all good. I love the one that guy when he goes to Vegas and sells his hair. That's one of my favorite ones. But it all comes back to having cable instead of DirecTV. And we laugh, and that's silly. But, I mean, this is true, right? We can look back on our life and see the choices we've made and how that changed the path that we were on. Why? Because the choices we make determine the paths we take. And you may be saying, wait a minute. There's lots of things in my life that I had no control over that determined the path I'm on right now. And you're right. We had no control over who our parents were or what kind of parents they were. Had no control over that. We have no control if we've inherited some kind of genetic disease. No control. You have no control whether or not if you were abused as a child. You have no control over that. You're right. But we do have control of our choices today. Based on those inherited situations, we can choose a different path. This is nothing new. The Israelites knew this. We're going to be looking in Nehemiah chapter 9, if you want to go ahead and turn there. We're not going to be reading a lot today, but we're going to be referring to some scriptures. Nehemiah and the Israelites. The Israelites, what we're going to see is they're going to rehearse some of their history. They're going to turn around and look backwards, just like we were talking about. And they're going to see how the decisions they had no control over changed the trajectory of Israel and what they inherited. All right? But they're also going to look at their own responsibilities in this mess. And they're going to confess their own. So they're going to confess the sins of their forefathers. They're going to confess the sins of them for themselves. And they are going to make a decision to change direction, to change course, to put themselves on a different path by the choices that they make. So let's look at chapter 9. Now, chapter 9 starts with that prayer, how we started worship this morning, that prayer of praise. That's part of Nehemiah chapter 9. That's verses 5 and 6. Before we get to more of chapter 9, let's think about what happened last week. Nehemiah 8. Last week in Nehemiah 8, we see the wall is completed. All right, they finished the project. And what do? They pull out the law of Moses, all right, which we think is the first five books of our Bible. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. And they read from this for 6 hours. That's a long church service right there. 6 hours they read from this. And at first they're like, oh my goodness. And they realize how they have made mistakes and they've sinned. And they start to mourn. And the leaders say, no, it's not time to mourn. It is time to celebrate because God is good to us. And look how he's delivered us. Look at all he's done as we look back. Look at all that God has done. So they start celebrating and praising. And they reestablish the festival of booths or the feast of the tabernacles. And so they're partying, right? And they're celebrating God. But Nehemiah takes place 2 days after the celebration. Nehemiah 9 takes two days after the celebration is when we start here. And this is where the feasting turns to fasting. The celebration turns to sorrow. The praising and all the celebration also turns to mourning. And we see in the beginning of chapter 9, the Israelites show up. And it looks like Halloween out there because they all don't have the normal clothes on. They have sackcloth on, which is really rough outer garment that's kind of like a potato sack, I guess, burlap, right? And they have ashes. They've taken ashes and they put it on their head and they put it on their body as a sign that we are mournful, we're sorry, and they fast. They stop eating because this is a serious moment in their religious and their spiritual life. And once again, the law of Moses is opened up. And it is read for 3 hours. Then the people spend 3 more hours confessing their sins and praising God. Somewhere in that day, the Levites, these are some of the people who help with the sacrifices, right, and the worship services at the temple. The Levites have everybody stand up, which to me tells me they weren't sitting down for these other 6 hours. They were probably on their knees, prostrate. I always have to be careful how to say that. Prostrate before the Lord, all right? But Levites say, stand up. And they read this prayer in Nehemiah chapter 9, which is the longest prayer recorded in the Bible, which we're not going to read the whole thing today, okay? But you can kind of be glancing through. We're going to hit some highlights. So first, in the prayer, verses 5 and 6, they celebrate God's creation and God's goodness in creating the heavens and the earth. Nobody else could do this. God is the only one who could do this. So they praise God for that. They praise God for the covenant that he made with Abraham. Remember what they're doing? They're looking back, right? They're starting at the beginning and they're working their way forward to see how their paths come about. They celebrate the fact that God chose Abraham not because he was a good man, although he ended up being a good man, but because of his faith. And God promised Abraham, your descendants will be as numerous as the stars in the sky and as numerous as the sand, the grains of sand on the beach. And I'm going to give you, your descendants, a promised land. And it's going to be yours. It's going to be flowing with milk and honey. And through you, Abraham, your seed will bless the entire world. And they celebrate this covenant that God made with Abraham. Then they celebrate the Exodus. You know, the Israelites were slaves in Egypt for 400 years. And God rescued them and delivered them. He brought up Moses, right, to rescue them in a miraculous way. They came to the Red Sea. And the Red Sea's parted. And they were able to walk across the dry land. And what happened to the Israelite armies? Right, the water engulfed them and killed them. They celebrated the fact that God rescued them. They celebrated, starting verse 12, the Mount Sinai and the giving of the Ten Commandments and the desert experience. In the desert experience, they celebrated the fact that God provided guidance by a pillar of fire at night and a pillar cloud by day. They celebrated that they got the Ten Commandments, right? Written by the very finger of God. That is something to celebrate. They celebrate because God protected them from foreign enemies during the wilderness experience. They celebrated because God always provided water, bread, and quail. They never went hungry. They celebrated because God was good and watched over them in the desert experience for 40 years. They celebrate in this prayer the promised land, the entering into the promised land, right? This is what God promised way back with Abraham. I will give you a land that is going to be your own. And in this land, they found houses that were already built, filled with stuff that they could use. They found vineyards that were full of grapes, fruit trees with fruit all over them, crops were there, olive trees. Wells were already dug. That's a hard job to dig a well. Wells were already dug. They had water. They didn't have to lift a finger. All because of God's goodness. So they celebrate the possession of the promised land. And then things change now. Start at verse 26. There's some confessing going on. And first, they confess the sins of their forefathers. They acknowledge the cycle of sin that their forefathers went through, where they follow God and then they moved away from God and started worshiping false gods. They blasphemed God. They ignored the law of God. They turned their back on Him. And what happened? God sent foreign oppressors to come in, right, and beat up on them. And then they would, what would they do? Lord, help us. We're your people. You're our God. And He would send a deliverer. He would send one of the judges. He would send somebody like Samson, right? And He would rescue them. And guess what they did? After being faithful for a little while, they went right back into the same cycle. And they're confessing this. They're confessing that their forefathers sinned. And it had an effect on them in their present situation. And then they go to confessing their own personal sins. Let's look in verse 9:33. You have been just, Lord. You have acted faithfully while we did wrong. They are personally culpable for their own sin. They're responsible for their own choices. And then in verse 36 and 37, they bring about what's going on right now, the present situation. And they ask God, Lord, look at what's going on. Please don't consider it just a trifling matter. This is serious. Look at what we're, even though you've sent us back to the promised land to rebuild the wall, we're still under the control of foreign kings. They still get our taxes. They still get our money. They still take our harvest. They can still conscript us and our animals into the army. They can force us to fight. Don't ignore this, Lord. Please, please rescue us. So that's their petition for grace and mercy in their current circumstances. Now, a really big shift comes in verse 38. Can you look at that? Chapter 9, verse 38. That's the end of the prayer. And then we see this phrase. In view of all this. In view of all this. In view of all what? In view of everything we just rehearsed, right? The whole history of God and His people. In view of all the things that God has done. In view of all His mercy, His kindness, His compassion, His forgiveness, His power, His strength, His miracles, His deliverance, in view of all that, and in view of our forefathers' decisions, our forefathers' choices, and in view of our current choices, and in view of what's going on right now, Lord, in view of all of this, we are making a binding agreement. We're going to put it in writing. And our leaders, our Levites and priests are affixing their seals to it. A written binding agreement. Now, the fixing of the seals, or you say they signed it, They're probably clay tablets, right? And some people think that the practice was for them to take their thumbnail and they would make their mark into the soft clay. Maybe it was a, maybe it had their special design. I don't know how they did it. But that was signifying that they're going to follow. And if you keep reading, you see other people sign this. Not everybody signed it, but everybody was in agreement to it, right? But the heads of the families all signed it, representing their families. And it was a binding agreement. What was this binding agreement all about? It was about obeying God, obeying God's laws. They said, we will follow the law of God, given through Moses, the servant of God. And we promise, this is chapter 10, verse 29, and we will obey carefully all the commands and regulations and decrees of the Lord our Lord. So this whole covenant from the beginning, chapter 10, verse 1, that goes all the way down to the end of chapter 10, is a binding agreement written down, and it's all about obedience. We're going to obey. And this is the general statement right here in verse 29. We're going to obey all the laws, all the commands of God. We're going to do this thing. But that was not good enough to have a binding written agreement and just be general. So they decided to get very specific. Three things they said they would do in chapter 10. We're going to obey God in our home. That is going to be the first thing we do. And here's what that looked like. They agreed not to let their sons daughter women from the outside. And they agreed not to give their daughters in marriage to men from the outside. Why? God had warned them over and over and over again about mixing with the foreign people because the foreign peoples don't worship Yahweh. They worship false gods. They have idols that they worship. They worship nature. They worship all these false gods. Do not intermarry with them or you will be pulled away from the true God. And when you look back in time, it happened over and over again. So they said, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to obey God when it comes to our home. They said, we're going to obey God when it comes to our business practices, of business dealings. On the Sabbath, when those people come with their wares and they're trying to sell us stuff, we're going to say, no, come back tomorrow. This is the Sabbath. This is the holy day of the Lord. And we're going to obey God in our business dealings. We're not going to sell. We're not going to buy. We're not going to trade. We're going to protect this day because that's obeying the Lord in our business dealings. And when it comes to our business dealings, we're also, after 7 years, we're going to forgive everybody's debts. Wouldn't that be nice? We're going to forgive debts. Land is going to go back to who originally owned it. We're going to not farm that seventh year because we've been storing up for 6 years before this. And the poor, they can have whatever they want out in the fields. It's going to be a heyday for them. In their business practices, they said, we will obey God. And then they said, we're going to obey God when it comes to the house of God. And if you read through this binding agreement that they've written down, they say, we're going to pay taxes, the temple tax, right? We're going to supply wood year around for the altar because God had stipulated that the fire on the altar must never go out. Well, how is that going to happen unless you have wood? So they divided up the whole year, and history tells us that nine times a year, different sets, different clans brought all this wood into the storehouse. So there would always be wood for the burning on the altar. They said, we're going to give God our first fruits of our crops, the first fruits of our trees. We're going to give God the firstborn of our cattle and the firstborn of our sons. And the practice was, and I'm pretty sure Jesus, when Mary and Joseph took Jesus to the temple and presented him, this is what took place. Same tradition. Parents could redeem their firstborn sons with 5 shekels paid to the temple. We're going to take care of the house of God by providing all that they need, the tithes, the offerings, everything they need for the worship, for the sacrifices, for the altars that happen at the temple. We are going to take care of the house of God. And those are the three things, the three specific things they chose to to put in this binding written agreement. So, in view of all this, here's what we're going to do. Let's write a plan. Let's promise. Let's get specific in our plan. All right, let's don't just be general. Oh, we're going to be good people. We're going to follow God. Let's get specific, and let's write it down. Let's sign it, and let's make it a binding agreement. And the choices they made that day determined the path they would take. Why? Because a written plan gave them a map to follow, a definite step-by-step process, something they could measure themselves by. Well, I think you and I need to follow this example of the Israelites. So I'm going to encourage you, I'm going to challenge you to do something. Here's three things I want to challenge you to do this week. One, I want you to reflect on your own path thus far. I want you to take some time to be quiet and to look backwards and see how choices have led to different parts, different trajectories of your path. And I want you to reflect on that. If you see God in that, then you praise God for it. You give Him glory. If you see your sin in that, and by the way, you will see both, right? Then confess that sin, just like the Israelites did in this prayer. Confess it. Confess the sins of your parents and grandparents. No, you're not responsible for what they did, but you're reaping the consequences. Confess it to God. Do what the Israelites did. Take some time to jot this down, maybe in a journal or something. You know, this is not a new precedent. If you read, well, Nehemiah 9, right? But if you read the Psalms, this is what the Psalms are. The Psalms are recalling God's greatness, and they're confessing sin. They're just looking backwards in time, and then they're looking forwards in time. That's all that's going on there, and we can follow that example. So write some thoughts down. Number two, write your own binding agreement, and be specific. This is just between you and God, right? Write your own binding agreement and make it very specific. If your family hardly ever prays together, then maybe you would write, other than mealtime, I will pray with my family one time a day. And that's simple, and it's specific. If you have an addiction and you're struggling with that, maybe you would write, I'm going to go to my support group three times a week for the next 6 weeks. If you're a kid or a teenager and you struggle with showing your parents respect and really treating them with honor, then maybe you would write, from now on, y'all taking notes on this? From now on, I will listen first, obey, and ask questions last. Sometimes we get that reversed, don't we? And what's the big question we always ask? Why? Yeah. So maybe that's what you need to decide. This is what I'm going to do. So make it very specific for you, for your family. Make it specific and try to use those three categories. You don't have to just stick to those three categories, but obey God in our home, obey God in our business practices, how do we handle work, and I would include school in that, teenagers. Most of you don't have jobs, so your work is school. And how are we going to obey when it comes to the house of God? How are you going to obey when it comes to the church? Specifically, it was all about money and materials, what they prayed about, what they put in their binding agreement. So examine your giving. If you're not giving what you think you should, then you write a specific goal down that you're going to do. I'm going to increase our giving by X percentage point. Starting next week or starting next month or something. Make it very specific. And then I'm going to challenge you to share your plan with somebody close to you. Maybe it's your spouse. Maybe it's a brother or sister. Maybe it's a close friend. Maybe it's your growth group. If you look in your growth group handout lessons, there's some of this going on. We're challenging you to review and reflect, to write down some thoughts, and to come up with a binding agreement, and maybe even This will be something different. Maybe your group wants to come up with a binding agreement that you as a group, here's what we're going to do. Okay, so why am I making a big deal out of this? Why is this so important? It is easy to go through life and let life happen to you. All right? Be pushed by the waves, wherever the wind blows, whatever feels good. It's a hard thing to say, here's what I'm going to do. This is my plan. Choices we make determine the paths we take. If I want to change my trajectory, then I have to change my choices. If I'm going to change my choices, I need a map. I need a map to follow. Here's what I'm going to do. And that whole sharing part is about accountability. We need each other to hold each other accountable to what God is calling us to do. And in one way, everybody in this class, in this room today, has already done that. Well, if you're a partner with Cordova Community Church, you've already done this to some extent. Because years ago, our leaders set up a partnership covenant. I don't know if you call it a binding agreement or not, but there's a place to sign your name. And we don't require people to sign their name to this partnership covenant. People feel kind of weird about that sometimes. So we say, all we need is your word. If you promise to do these things, then we consider you part of us as a family at Cordova. And here's some of the things we put in that leadership covenant, in that partnership covenant. I will protect the unity of this church by acting in love toward other partners, by refusing to gossip, by following her servant leaders. I will serve the ministry of this church by discovering and using my gifts and talents, by being equipped to serve by its leaders, by developing a servant's heart. I will share the responsibility of this church by praying for her growth, by being financially faithful to her, by participating weekly in a growth group. I will support the mission of this church by owning her purpose and vision, by attending faithfully, by living a godly life. Now, if you were to measure yourself by all those things, I imagine most of us in this room would say, hey, I'm doing pretty good on these things. I feel pretty good about myself. But I also bet there's one or two of these you're thinking, I could do a better job in that area. So we already have an agreement if you're a partner with us. Some of you, you've never seen this before. This is one of the things we go over when we do a partnership class. So I'm not going to ask you to sign anything today. I'm not going to ask you to take your fingernail and put it in something to make your mark. I just want you to consider what I'm challenging you to do. What would it look like if our church took all these things really seriously? If every person in our church took all these things seriously? And if you, when you do your own binding agreement, what changes would it make in your life if you really took those things seriously? I mean, we would be people who are attractive to other people. We would be growing closer to God. I think if we took these things seriously, we would grow numerically as well. I think it would increase our influence and your personal influence with other people. We would be united and on mission together. People would be encouraged. So much more ministry would take place if we use and discover and use our gifts and talents and not wait for some church leader to say, hey, here's what we're going to do. You are empowered to serve God with your own gifts and talents. If everyone connected to CCC lived godly lives, truly godly lives, served wholeheartedly, we would make a huge impact on our city. So what kind of Christian do you want to be? Where do you want to go? What do you want it to look like? You can make a map to get there by the choices you make. Because the choices we make determine the paths we take. Can you say that with me again? The choices we make determine the paths that we take. In view of all this, in view of everything we've talked about today, in view of all that you know about God, in view of your past, in view of your present circumstances, in view of where you want to go, what are you going to do about it? You have some choices to make. Maybe we can help you with those choices. Maybe we can help hold you accountable. We can pray for you. Some of us maybe are ready to make a choice today to do something different. We're going to stand and sing a song. The shepherds and I will be in the back. And if you want to come and make a new commitment or ask for prayer or confess or whatever, we're there for you. Let's stand and sing this song.